Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. And obviously we are back on after a week off, so hope everyone was able to manage to get through their week. I know, such a void in their life without the Behind the Bets podcast. It was good to take a little break. We have just UFC coming up. So Matthew Holt and Lou Finocchiaro will join the program. Obviously, I mentioned it before. We had some scheduling issues in the past, so it was good to coordinate our schedules and get both guys ahead of this weekend's card. So those guys are standing by. Will join us momentarily. Just want to remind everyone, a lot of good content on ESPN.com's chalk page. We have NBA plays on Wednesdays and Fridays, and a lot of our best bets, obviously daily wagers, Monday through Friday. We've been on an absolute tear. This month, I've been hot, but I fell just short of the all-time mark. I had won 9 straight, lost on Monday. The big man, Stanford Steve, he gets his 10th straight win, and he's in and out of this show, so it's kind of fun. It's extended over a few weeks. So Steve won last night, so I think he's off today. And then he'll be back on the show. And I'm 16-2 this month. So it's been a fun February. We've had a lot of fun with these win streaks. So I encourage everyone to tune in. And as far as the podcast, I want to let you know, we're going to have some basketball talk. Obviously just the calendar makes it tough with a shelf life of a podcast. So we're going to figure out a way. I think we're going to talk some big NBA one next week going into the All-Star break. That makes the most sense to me. So it can kind of live. We can look at some value moving forward now that the second half schedule has been posted. And obviously we're going to have some March Madness stuff once we get close to the big dance, even some conference championship week as well. So I want to thank everyone there. And I also want to thank our producer, Christina. This is your final podcast with us. You're not leaving the company, just shifting around some schedules. And I just really wanted to thank you for all your work behind the scenes.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Obviously guys, we live I work in an environment where it's all about, people on camera, the people on air and stuff like that. But there are just so many people behind the scenes, and ESPN would not be what it is today and had all the success over the years without all the behind the scenes people. So, we wish Christina well. She's staying in the podcast division, and, maybe we'll cross paths again. So we've had some producers come and go, but everyone's done well after they've, shifted off the Behind the Bets. So, thanks to you. And before we get into today's episode, I want to quickly remind you that KJZ is on ESPN Radio weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern. This show brings you all the latest sports news on NFL offseason moves and what's happening with the NBA, with insights of former Super Bowl champ Keyshawn Johnson, former Duke basketball star Jay Williams, and co-host Zubin Mehenti. KJZ is also available as a podcast after each show that you can find wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop. Hammer time.
Oh, the gang is back together. Matthew Holt, Lou Finocchiaro back with us here to break down this weekend's card. Last week, Lou, you did really well on the, and they're the same Bat Time, Bat Channel, Bat Octagon, if you will. So they're back at the Apex this weekend. And I want to get both of your opinions. But Lou, I want to start with you in terms of the main event here. Rozenstrike and Gone, about a 280 favorite here. What's your read here?
My read here is that this is going to be a really excellent competitive fight. I think that the winner kind of separates himself from a huge group of people trying to enter the top 4 athletes in the heavyweight division. Both are kickboxing specialists, and both are aggressive. The difference is that Gon's career really started in 2016. He's only got about 7 fights deep. By 2016, Rozenstrike had some 24, 25 kickboxing competitions under his belt. Both are kickboxers, as I've mentioned. And so you would think that experience goes to Rozenstrike, and I believe it does. However, Gon is the one that has 3 submission wins on his record. And it's my opinion that Gon, if he's coached correctly and has some fight IQ, would choose to take this fight against Rozenstrike, not at Rozenstrike's strength, which is kickboxing and distance, but rather up close and personal, grind him against the cage and eventually take him to the ground where he is completely a fish out of water. Gon had showed against Boser as well as Junior Dos Santos that he has the strength and ability to press against the fence. And based on the lack of body of work that I've seen from Gon, I really hesitate to take him as a favorite. That said, beware of the hot underdog, and Rosenstreak is a very hot underdog. If this line, I tracked it, Gon opening at minus 300. If this thing continues to get down lower than 240 or 230, I'll definitely take a look at Gon. I think he has the ability to exercise wrestling and grappling where Rosenstreak doesn't. Gun to my head, I'd go over 1.5 or over 2.5. And that's really kind of how I look at it.
All right. So we could have a public dog in your eyes, and that's the case in any sport. So be careful, the popular underdog. What about you, Matthew?
Well, I think if nothing else, Rosenstreak has a path to victory. When we're betting underdogs greater than 2-1, we need to have that path to victory for Rosenstreak. That's fairly obvious here. 10 knockouts and 11 out of 11 victories. So his path to victory for me is pretty clear. The one thing that stood out to me about this total, over 1.5 rounds minus 230. So Rosenstreak's had 12 fights. 10 of those 12 fights have ended in the first or second round. And we're talking about a guy who's been in there with Junior Dos Santos, Francis Ngannou, Alistair Overeem, Andre Arlovsky, Junior Albini. He's been in there with some of the better talent in the UFC. So the fact that his fights continue to end so quickly and they have that devastating knockout power really led me to believe that the value is probably on the under. Is this fight more likely to go over than under? Yes. But is it going to go over 1.5 rounds 72% of the time? I don't think so. Especially not with the way these two tend to bang and get people out of there. And what worries me about Gon in this fight a little bit is, yes, he got to show off some of that wrestling and submission game that we rarely see from an athletic kickboxer from France, but those were against the smallest of heavyweights. Tanner Boser is really a blown-up light heavyweight. He's had some success at heavyweight because of his speed, but he's very small. Junior Dos Santos isn't the biggest heavyweight either. I'm wondering if he's going to be able to have the same success against a much bigger Rosenstreak, and it only takes one shot from Rosenstreak. I think my lean here is under 1.5 rounds plus 180.
Yeah, you get some big money on that one. So, okay, so nothing firm on the main event, but it was good to flush it out. Let's go to the co-main, and I want to go with get both of you, and but Matthew, you have a play here.
Yeah, I actually took the underdog here, Nikita Krylov, plus 290 is the number I got. If you shop around, you might be able to get some plus 300s now. And I actually also played the under here, under 1.5 rounds at plus 135. And I think this fight isn't likely to last all that long. Nikita Krylov's always been a finish or fit get finished type of fighter. 26 of his 27 career professional wins have ended in a finish. 6 of his 7 career professional losses have ended in a finish. This guy tends to get people out of there. He has been a little more measured lately. He hasn't exactly been the kill or be killed in the first round fighter that we saw in his first UFC stint, but that is still how this guy goes after it. And what's interesting in this matchup is Ankalaev is known for his head kicks and his amazing striking, but Krylov has some really good head kicks, maybe underrated here. And if this goes to the ground, Krylov's submission game is amazing. His one big weakness is that while aggressively attempting submissions, he tends to gas himself out, leaving himself vulnerable to either get submitted or KO'd, especially get submitted. Ankalaev isn't exactly a submission guy. He's more of a kickboxer. He likes to keep the fight standing. 9 of his 14 wins by knockout, 0 wins by submission as a professional. That's been the kryptonite to beating Nikita Krylov. I actually think Krylov has the advantage on the ground. I think he's going to be more than competent in the stand-up. And at plus 290, I'm willing to take a shot with Nikita Krylov.
Hmm. Interesting. What about you, Lou? How do you? What are your thoughts on those comments?
My thoughts are that I believe Ankalaev is the real deal, but he'll be the real deal if he looks impressive against Krylov here. I don't really have an opinion. I'm not prepared to take the dog in this one. I think this is a due diligence fight for me, where I will watch and learn.
Gotcha. All right. So observing, maybe jump in live even. There's those opportunities. Lou, you have an opinion on the first female fight, or at least going from top to bottom. So then the main card with De La Rosa and Buena Silva.
Yeah, I like this fight for Montana De La Rosa. I like the fact that her last fight, and in desperation mode, she lost to Arahu, who is one heck of a top tier in the women's strawweights. Now she takes on another Brazilian. In this case, Montana is going to be the taller fighter, 3 years the younger fighter, fighting at her natural weight as Buena Silva's dropping down for this fight. She'll also have 2 inches of reach advantage. I like her body of work. I like the fact that she left her husband, who's also a UFC fighter, to train alone at Team Elevation up in Colorado. She's tough. She's durable. She can compete on the ground. And when you look at striking, she strikes at 3.3 significant strikes a minute and is hit only 3 significant strikes a minute. Meanwhile, Buena Silva, 4.5 strikes, significant strikes a minute that she gives, but she receives 6.7. So where this fight takes place is who's going to win. Buena Silva's got to find a way to latch on to the longer, taller, younger De La Rosa and get this fight to the floor. And if De La Rosa can keep distance and keep it standing, I believe she pieces Buena Silva up. And I love the hunger factor. I like the sole exclusive training at Team Elevation without her husband. And I think she's in a real good spot as an underdog here.
Yeah, why is she the dog after how you explained that striking metrics?
There's been some hot Brazilian females the last few fight cards. Maybe that comes into it a little bit, as well as recency on De La Rosa is that she's lost a couple of fights. They do have one common opponent, the Italian Barella, who is really not UFC caliber. They both beat her. This is going to be a real close, tight, competitive fight, but I believe De La Rosa's she's got the chops to keep this standing and keep the Brazilian fighter at distance.
Okay, so the final card on the main card, final fight, I should say, on the main card is Caceres, about minus 200, minus 210 against Kevin Kroom, and you kind of looking at the dog here.
Boy, I love the styles make fights here. Alex Caceres is really a extremely athletic, fluid-moving fighter who has had trouble with his focus until he moved with his girlfriend down to Florida, where his girlfriend's family lives. And he's shown himself to be really focused since he went to Florida. The thing about Caceres is from 2014 until now, he's had 7 losses. 3 of those happen to be by submission. He's capable on the floor, but that's not where he excels. Meanwhile, we have the hard-hitting hillbilly, Kevin Kroom, fighting out of Glory MMA. He's got some interesting wins on his docket, mainly Minner, who had a great win last week against Charles Rosa. Kroom has beat him. Kroom is a little bit the older fighter, but he's the taller fighter, and he's going to have the same reach as Caceres. If Caceres can keep distance and keep it on the feet, I think he's got a chance here. However, I think Kroom's going to be able to close distance, grab a hold of him, and drag this to the floor. I think Kroom is very live here at a plus 175, depending where you shop, underdog.
Okay, so a live dog. And you like to wait until the weigh-ins. Why is that?
It's so important to wait until the weigh-ins. And the reason I chose these two fights to talk about, Doug, is because these guys are going to make weight. But when you have COVID and weigh-ins, we're sometimes missing 3 or 4 fights between weigh-ins and the time they drop the puck on the first fight. And so for that reason, I have to see weigh-ins to see how the fighters look, which ones are drawn, the first set of fighters come out in 20 minutes. They get to go back, drink orange juice, eat bananas, and rehydrate. And those that wait for the last half hour to weigh in clearly have had trouble losing weight. And to me, that's a good tell and a good indicator as to how their fight may go.
All right, good stuff. Makes sense. You've talked about it in the past. I just want to kind of remind our listeners here. Let's go to the prelims. And Matthew, you're on Oliveira here.
Yeah, look, one of the longest reigning
straight pick them.
Yeah, one of the longest reigning positive trends in UFC has been betting against favorites making their debut. And here we have Kurmagomedov making his debut in the UFC. And this is a rare spot. I mean, not often do you see a guy making his pro debut against someone as experienced as Alex Cowboy Oliveira. I think this is a tough spot to make his pro debut. I mean, this is an Alex Oliveira who has, in his last three fights, wins over Peter Sabata and Max Griffin. He's been in there with the likes of, you know, a Cowboy Cerrone, Mike Perry, Gunnar Nelson, Nicholas Dalby. He lost to a very impressive young fighter in Shavkat Rakhmonov in his last fight. You know, this is a guy who's been in there with some of the best guys in the world, including wins over Tim Means, Carlos Condit, former UFC title challenger, has a fight with Gilbert Burns, although he did lose it. I mean, Alex Cowboy Oliveira is a guy who's been around for a long time and I think is starting to put the pieces together at this point and just ran into a world beater of a young fighter. Now they're putting him in with another young fighter, in this case, a guy making his pro debut. And although Kurmagomedov is, you know, does fight out of the Couture gym, which I think is an advantage, he hasn't fought anybody up to this level yet. And I think at a pick 'em, Alex Oliveira is probably a steal.
Okay. So you're just thinking the experience and the battle tested component to them, but there's a lot of upside here. But, you know, slight favorite, I guess I'd say 120 to 110. But interesting matchup there. Okay, Lou, I want to go back to you as we are at the bottom of the card here. And Vince Cachero has your eye, and he's a slight dog as well, about $140 on the comeback.
Yeah, this is a fight that features a couple of bantamweight fighters. Ronnie Lawrence, 6-1. He arrives. This is his debut fight in the UFC, and he's fighting a kid in Vince Cachero. This is his second fight in the UFC. So immediately, just like an NFL football team or a college football team, there is drastic improvement between game one and game two. I believe that's the same case in the world of mixed martial arts as well, Doug. Cachero's first fight, now he's a 135er. He took on 2 days' notice, and he fought one of the largest featherweights at the featherweight level and got the brakes beat off of him. However, he showed himself to be tough, and he did not quit, and that fight... you know, while it wasn't very competitive at all, it went to decision. Now he gets a debut fighter. He gets the benefit of a full camp. And I really think that in this particular case, Lawrence might be getting a little bit too much attention here because I think Cachero's coming with his ears pinned back. And I believe he should be the one that should be the favorite here. And I think he's in an excellent spot in this position.
All right. So you like the dog there, the second fight. I can get behind that rationale. And the first fight on the cards, we're getting going early here, Matthew. And you like a dog here as well. And the total.
Yeah, I like Grishin and under here. You know, Dustin Jacoby's a guy who was in the UFC before, you know, was out of the UFC for some period of time. And now the UFC has brought him back at a much heavier weight. This is a guy who's now fighting at 205 pounds that used to fight at 185 pounds. And he did get a win in his first fight back against, you know, Justin Lede, who I'm not sure what to make of it. But I didn't think he looked like he carried 205 well. So I was not very impressed. This is a guy who failed, you know, terribly, basically when he went over to Bellator, losing to King Mo, who's done nothing but lose. And since retire, since lost to John Salter, got finished by him, didn't have that much success either in WSOF. So I'm not overly confident in Dustin Jacoby's ability to come in here and suddenly, you know, resuscitate his career. On the other side, I get a Maxime Grishin, who's been really, really good. His only two losses in his last 20 fights are to Ankalaev, who's fighting in the, you know, co-main event of this and is a minus 360 favorite in the co-main event, and a fight where he stepped up and fought Marcin Tybura at heavyweight. And I don't know why he did it. I don't know why he decided to move up to heavyweight for one fight, but now he's back down to his natural weight at 205. And we have a fight back in October of seeing how good he is back at his natural weight of 205, scoring a second round knockout over Antigulov in October. So this guy at 205 has done nothing but win fights. I expect that to continue here. And not only do I expect him to win this fight, I think he's going to do what he does best, which is get knockout victories. So I took Grishin and I took a little play on the under plus money as well.
Why do you think he's such a, I don't know, sizable dog here?
I don't know. For whatever reason, Dustin Jacoby, and I thought he was way too big of a favorite in his last fight in the UFC, kind of his comeback fight, his first fight at 205. And I actually played Lede against him. And while Jacoby won by knockout, Lede landed some big shots early, and it looked like he might hurt Jacoby. And then Jacoby was able to hurt and stop him. But Jacoby's strike defense isn't good. He eats shots. And Maxime Grishin is a very sound technical striker.
Okay. All right, fellas. I think that wraps it up for us. That was a very quick, speedy run through, which is, I know, what our listeners like. And it was good to get both guys weighing in on these fights. Anything to add or anything along those lines?
Not for me.
No, I just hope everyone enjoys the fights. I'm happy we were able to schedule it so I could join you two. I'm always the benefit of extra knowledge when I listen to Matthew break down fights, so I'll just say thank you.
Oh, thanks to you as well, my friend, and good to be with you guys, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Lou. Thanks, Doug. Best of luck, everybody.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Okay, that'll do it for this edition of Behind the Bets. Thanks to Matthew and Lou, of course, and thank you once again to Christina. And thanks to everyone for downloading, subscribing, rating, and reviewing. All those metrics matter in this space, if you will. And we'll be back next week, likely talking some hoops. So have a great weekend and enjoy the fight card.